This is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey, back with you live now. Most Mondays on the show, we gather reporters from around the state to talk about some of the stories they're working on. Today, we're going to spend the rest of the program discussing two aspects of an industry that covers much of Illinois, literally, and that's farming. Coming up, we'll hear about how a warming climate is changing how we farm. But first, equity in agriculture and who gets to farm. According to the U.S. Department of Agriculture, the number of black farm owners and operators has been plummeting in Illinois and around the country since the 1920s. Black farm owners and operators have long been discriminated against by the USDA, as documented by government reports, especially when it comes to financial assistance. Back in 2021, when Congress passed the American Rescue Plan, one of the less discussed aspects of the economic relief package was a provision aimed at providing debt relief to farmers, specifically black and other socially disadvantaged farmers. But last June, that effort was put on hold by the courts. A similar piece of legislation proposed by State Representative Sonia Harper has been working its way through the legislature since last year. Joining us now to talk about that is Amanda Perez Pintado. She covers agriculture for Investigate Midwest via Report for America. Amanda, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being with us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Listeners, we want to hear from you, especially if you're a farmer who has concerns along these lines or a story like this. We'd love to hear you at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. So, Amanda, when we say the number of black farmers has been dropping for the past century, how drastic is that change?
Well, it's been a pretty steep decline. The peak of number of black farmers in the United States was in 1920 with more than 920,000 black farmers across the country, and they made up about 14% of all producers. Now, according to the 2017 Census of Agriculture, which was the last year with data with numbers available, there are over 48,000 black producers in the country, and that makes up for only 1.4% of the country's 3.4 million producers.
About 14% to 1.4%, literally a tenfold decrease. So according to your reporting and reports from the USDA itself, as I mentioned, the department has this history of discriminating against black farmers and other farmers of color. Can you just give us some examples? What does that look like in practice?
Yeah, so the USDA itself has documented its discriminatory practices against black farmers. And in terms of unfair treatment when applying for loans and assistance. And in 1997, the department reached a settlement with black farmers known as the Pickford Settlements. And in that case, black farmers were accusing the department of denying them funds due to discrimination. So in terms of practices where the federal government has to, is asked from black farmers for loans or financial assistance, there is a long history of discrimination there. And that's what that debt relief program that was supposed to roll out last year was supposed to redress.
You spoke with a farmer near Galesburg. What happened there?
Yeah, so I spoke to a farmer in Galesburg, Illinois, and he had applied for a grant from a USDA agency, and the process was not great for him. The USDA agent, he said, visited his property without letting him know, and then he denied his application. And, you know, he asked, when I was talking to him, he asked himself, you know, why would she do this to me, referring to the USDA agency? Why would she just, the USDA agent, why would she just deny me without even talking to me? And he said, I quote, I started feeling they discriminated against me for whatever reason.
Well, so there are moves afoot to try and address some of this historic discrimination and even, you know, possibly present day discrimination, as your reporting suggested. What would the Black Farmer Restoration Program Act, introduced, as I mentioned last year, by State Representative Sonia Harper, what would that do?
Yeah, so the Black Farmer Restoration Program Act is intended to support black producers. And the main component in that bill is that it would create a fund. It would direct the Department of Agriculture to establish a Black Farmer Restoration Fund. And through that fund, the government would purchase farmland and grant it to eligible individuals. The land grants would be of up to 100 acres, and they're prioritizing, and I'm quoting the bill here, socially disadvantaged farmers and applicants with a family history of land dispossession. And Illinois isn't the only state that has legislation like this. North Carolina and South Carolina recently presented similar bills. And at the federal level, last year, Senator Cory Booker presented the Justice for Black Farmers Act, which aims to provide debt relief and also creates a land grant program for Black producers.
But these, these have not necessarily been widely popular ideas, right? I mean, there's been some resistance, I guess I should say. So what sort of reaction have you seen from other farmers about this?
There has been some resistance. And, you know, when I spoke to that farmer in Galesburg, he said himself, referring to the Black Farmer Restoration Program Act, you know, this isn't the first time that the government makes promises to Black farmers. And when I spoke to Sonia, Representative Sonia Harper, she said that, you know, she expects pushback similar to what that debt relief program that was supposed to roll out last year got, which was that it was discriminatory against white farmers. So there has been some pushback to similar efforts. And even though that farmer I spoke to from Galesburg is hopeful, he doesn't want to put all his hopes into the government.
Amanda Perez-Pintado is a reporter for Investigate Midwest through Report for America. Amanda, thanks so much for being with us today on the 21st and sharing your reporting with us.
Thanks for having me.
Coming up, we'll be staying on the topic of agriculture and talking about the environment, pivoting toward the on-the-ground realities of climate change in the Midwest with two more reporters who've been covering the effects of climate change on farmers, including how we farm, like the corn ethanol that helps fuel our cars and could actually increase greenhouse gas emissions. That's coming up after a short break. You're listening to the 21st. Stay with us. This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. As we do every Monday, we gather reporters, or most Mondays anyway, we gather reporters from around Illinois and talk about some of the stories they're working on. And we're concluding our program today talking about agriculture issues. And for the rest of the show, we're going to be talking about the intersection of the climate and agriculture. And joining us now are Shayla Farzan, a reporter with St. Louis Public Radio. Welcome, Shayla, to the 21st Show.
Thanks so much for having me.
Our other guest is Dana Cronin, who covers food and agriculture for Illinois Newsroom and Harvest Public Media. Dana, welcome back to the show to you as well.
Thank you, Brian.
And listeners, if you're just joining us, we're going to be discussing, as I said, the intersection of agriculture and environmental policies and how climate change is affecting farmers in the Midwest. You can join our conversation by giving us a call at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. So, Dana, I'm going to begin with you. In your recent reporting, you looked into a study on some environmental regulations and their actual environmental impact. Can you start by just talking about what the renewable fuel standard did when it was passed back in 2005?
Sure. So, the idea behind the renewable fuel standard is to blend more biofuel, so really any fuel that derives from plants or animals, into gasoline. The goal being to make gasoline, you know, more environmentally friendly, as well as reducing our dependence on foreign oil, which was a big priority at that time. So, you know, if you're at the gas pump and you see a little sticker that says something like contains up to 10% ethanol, that's likely because of the RFS.
I'd always wondered why that started to come about, and we had so much more corn in our gas. So what did those researchers find when they examined the environmental effects of that law?
Right. So there have been questions about whether the RFS is accomplishing the environmental goals that it set out to accomplish. And that's in large part because when the RFS was passed, it incentivized a lot of people to grow a lot of corn. And growing corn has a big environmental impact, especially because in a lot of cases, natural landscape was converted to corn production. And as one of the researchers on this study told me, when you take a natural landscape and you convert it to annual crop production, there are significant carbon emissions associated with that, coming from, you know, things like fertilizer use and tilling the land. And the authors found that this huge land use change that occurred after the RFS passed resulted in carbon emissions greater than those associated with the use of traditional gasoline. So in effect, the RFS, according to this study, ultimately did more damage to the environment than it helped.
And so I think of what I'm hearing is that it's not necessarily the burning of the ethanol or, you know, the gas itself that's the issue, but the process to create this ethanol. I mean, is this because of incentives programs, or are the farmers just getting more money for the corn because of this demand for it for this purpose?
Right, right. The RFS, like I said, incentivized a lot of corn production. It, you know, the price of corn increased after the RFS passed, which makes people want to plant more corn, right? And I think this study is unique because it really looked at corn ethanol in a more wholesome way. It really looked at the land use change associated with the renewable fuel standard. And, you know, it found that millions of acres of U.S. land have been converted to cropland as a result of the RFS, which has, you know, added significantly to our overall greenhouse gas emissions.
What have been the reactions you've heard to this study?
Yeah, well, it's, you know, it's been mixed, of course. I talked to some environmental experts who actually really weren't surprised by some of these findings. They basically told me it confirmed some of their long-held suspicions about how environmentally beneficial the RFS really is. But I also spoke with folks from the ethanol industry who said that the study overstates the environmental impact of corn ethanol, and, you know, that the study goes against common sense. Though I should note that in talking to them, some of the research they pointed to was paid for by their own organization. So do with that what you will. But, you know, lastly, Brian, I just want to note that I think reactions have been so varied and impassioned in a lot of cases, because the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency is considering changes to the renewable fuel standard right now. So the original standard set blending requirements to expire this year and left it up to the EPA to determine the standards from there on out. So they're expected to announce those new blending requirements in May. So this study really came at a crucial moment.
800-222-9455 if you want to join our conversation, especially if you are a farmer yourself or live in a farm community. How have you benefited from this renewable fuel standard? Or maybe you've seen some of the effects of more of your neighbors turning over more of their cropland to corn that they might have used for other crops or just let lie fallow in the past. 800-222-9455 is the number to join our conversation. 800-222-9455. Shayla Farzan with St. Louis Public Radio. I want to bring you into the conversation now, and let's talk about some of the tangible effects of these carbon emissions and climate change we've been talking about. Warming winters, changing weather patterns, what have been some of the ways this shift in climate has affected Midwestern farmers and forced them to adapt?
Right. I mean, I think that climate change is obviously having a whole sort of range of effects on farming in the Midwest right now. One of the key trends that we're seeing is that cold seasons are warming faster on average than warm seasons. So if we look at the long-term climate records, so this is data going back to the late 1800s, those data show that winter is the fastest warming season. So the four hottest Januaries on record have all happened since 2016. And January 2020 was actually the hottest ever January recorded on Earth. And if we look at Illinois, for instance, winters are about 4 to 5 degrees warmer on average now than it was in 1970. So, I mean, obviously, when we're talking about farming, farming is an industry that's very, very dependent on weather. We know that winters are getting a lot warmer, but how does that affect agriculture? So there's a couple different ways.
But I was going to say, that sounds pretty good to me as a city dweller,
yeah,
but I suspect
exactly.
There's a shoe to drop. Go ahead.
I know. I think that people kind of often think, oh, great, I don't have to wear a warmer coat now. But for farming, I think it's having a couple big effects. One is on soil fertility. So historically, soils in Illinois and across the Midwest are really, really fertile because they freeze every winter. And what that does is it basically slows down all of the biological activity in those soils. So the bacteria, the insects, the detritivores, everything that's breaking those soils down, all that comes to a halt in winter. So you can imagine that warmer winters can mean that the soil is either frozen for shorter periods of time, or potentially it doesn't freeze at all. So that can really affect nutrient quality. And then the other big effect of warming winters is that the growing season is getting longer. So I interviewed a farmer in Northwest Missouri on the Nebraska border named Richard Oswald. And his family had been farming in that area since the 1840s. And when he was growing up, the rule of thumb was that you never planted corn before mid-May because it just wasn't warm enough. And it was too risky to plant any earlier than that. And he's in his 70s now. And in his lifetime, he told me that the growing season has shifted forward by more than a month. So it's not uncommon now for corn growers in Northwest Missouri to plant in mid-April now, sometimes even as early as April 1st. So this is a huge shift forward in the growing season.
Wow. At the very beginning of the show, we talked to some people who are running for office in Illinois, and one of them is a woman running for U.S. Senate as a Republican, Peggy Hubbard. She said she didn't really believe in climate change. This has obviously become a political issue, and it's, you know, often framed as a personal belief rather than science. What do you hear from farmers you talk to?
Yeah, I mean, the farmers I spoke with for this story told me that climate change is not really something that farmers in their circles are willing to discuss, at least not yet. They will kind of openly talk about the weather, but climate change feels like a hot button issue that's too controversial for them to discuss. And I mean, even the farmer that I was just talking about, who was farming in Northwest Missouri, I mean, he has become very, very outspoken about climate change. And he told me, you know, as farmers, everything that we do is based on data and science. But he's become increasingly frustrated by what he views as farmers in his community basically turning their backs on science when it comes to climate change. He said, you know, climate, like the data shows that climate change is happening, but farmers are not willing to discuss it. And I think that that is particularly frustrating for him because, you know, there's not this opportunity to have a candid conversation about it. And without being able to talk about it openly, he's worried that they will be caught flat-footed by future climate disasters and climate impacts.
Dana, is that your experience as well? Do people sort of adopt hushed tones and you know, put a side eye on, see if anyone's listening when you talk with them about climate in the farming community?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, it's an interesting experience reporting on climate change in the ag community because, you know, oftentimes people just don't want to talk about it with you. Although I think, ironically, you know, a lot of these farmers intimately know what climate change looks like, right? They're so in tune with the weather, you know, more so than the average person. And so they're well aware of these climate changes, but I think there is just a reluctance to talk about it openly. Like Shayla said, it's just seen as a political issue. It's hot button, and a lot of farmers don't want to go there at this time.
So Shayla, what sort of adaptations are these are farmers looking at? You mentioned, you know, the soil breakdown is not slowed as much if the winters are warmer, the planting season is earlier. What sort of things are farmers doing in response to this warming winters and a warming climate in general?
Yeah, so I mean, the farmers I talked with had told me that, you know, climate change for them is something that's really on their radar. It's something they're already thinking about. They're trying to plan for it. There are lots of different potential responses here. So, you know, possibly cutting out certain crops that don't make sense to grow anymore, adjusting when they're planting, obviously, when they're harvesting, and even in some cases, how they're growing their crops. So I spoke with this one farmer who is a small organic vegetable grower outside of Columbia, Missouri. And what she told me is that she is moving toward more and more growing inside of these high tunnel greenhouses. So if you've never seen one of these before, they basically have these huge flexible sheets of plastic that are kind of pulled up over a curved metal structure. And she's installed 4 of these greenhouses in about a decade because inside the crops are completely protected from extreme weather. So she grew up in Colombia. She's noticed that the weather has become more and more extreme over the years, where you'll have sort of a really warm 70 degree winter day. And then, you know, 2 days later you get 18 inches of snow, and that can be really, really devastating for a vegetable farmer. And these are impacts that we know are associated with climate change that we're going to see more of in the future. So inside of these greenhouses, she's kind of buffered from those extreme swings in weather. She can plant when she wants to, she can harvest when she wants to, but I mean, obviously, on the flip side, it comes at a really big cost, right? Like when she installed one of these greenhouses about 7 years ago, it was $18,000. Now the price is more than doubled. So she told me, you know, every time I look at this greenhouse, I think, how many heads of lettuce am I going to have to sell to pay for that thing? And it's a lot of lettuce.
A lot of lettuce and about a lot of energy to keep it cool or warm as needed. All right, we're going to have to leave this conversation there. I suspect this will be something we return to many times in the months and years ahead. Shayla Farzon is a reporter with St. Louis Public Radio. Dana Cronin covers food and agriculture for Illinois Public Media and Harvest Public Media. Shayla, Dana, thanks so much for being with us and sharing your reporting with us on the 21st.
You're welcome.
Thanks so much.
And that's all the time we have for our show today. Before we go, I do want to urge you to join our texting group. You heard some of the text messages we got from listeners suggesting questions for political candidates at the beginning of the show. You can join by sending the word TALK, T-A-L-K, to 217-803-0730. That's TALK to 217-803-0730. The 21st is produced by Anna Casey, Aiden Choate, and Erica Scalise, who's also our engagement producer. Our interns are Owen Henderson, Zainab Qureshi, and Brielle Skalark. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk with you again tomorrow.